And good morning. Welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Acton. Glad you could join us. Well, the election is still over a week away, but it's pretty safe to predict the winners in about 400 of the 435 U.S. House races that are being contested next week. After all, most incumbents are shoo-ins to get reelected, and so many districts are dominated so completely by one party or the other that there are very few surprises in U.S. House races come Election Day. But two of the House races that are getting lots of attention are right here in Minnesota. Analysts say that Minnesota's 6th District is a virtual toss-up, and Wednesday night we'll be broadcasting a debate between the two candidates in that race, Democrat Bill Luther and Republican John Klein. Today on Midday, we're going to focus on the other Minnesota congressional race that's getting national attention, the 4th District contest in Ramsey County, including St. Paul and parts of Dakota County. 4th District seat has been held by Democrats for 52 years, most recently by the late Bruce Vento. But with no incumbent and changing demographics, the 4th District is thought to be very much up for grabs this year. Today, as part of our Meet the Candidates series, we've been joined here in the studio by the three major candidates who are running for that 4th District seat, Democrat and North St. Paul State Representative Betty McCollum, Republican and Vadnais Heights State Senator Linda Runbeck, and Independence Party candidate and former Ramsey County Attorney Tom Foley. They have come by today to talk about the issues and take your questions. So if you have a question for the candidates, give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free, and that number is 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Folks, thanks for coming in today. We're all crowded here in our little studio.
Thanks for having us here.
Great.
Now, you folks have been campaigning for several weeks. To get started here, let me just work around this way here. If you could, for a minute or so, why do you think that you're the best candidate for the 4th District seat? What do you offer that the other two candidates don't? Betty McCollum, you want to start?
Well, I offer a long service of community activity and community involvement in the 4th District. I grew up in South St. Paul. My husband and I have raised our children in North St. Paul. And I've worked with local elected officials on making sure that we had opportunities for housing and transit when I was on the city council. And as a state representative, I've worked very hard for a cleaner environment, worked on health care issues for families, and I've been working very, very hard to make sure that the people in the 4th District feel that they have someone who will listen to them and be accessible to them in the same way that Bruce was.
Tom Foley, what do you bring to the race that the other two candidates don't?
Well, I think the experience that I've had, I've spent 16 years as a Ramsey County attorney making sure that our schools and streets are safe. I've spent 3 years in Washington, D.C., regulating gaming as a commissioner, the National Gaming Commission, regulating any of the irregularities of gaming activities all over the United States. And I represented the state of Minnesota in Washington, D.C. as their representative with the administration in Capitol Hill and working with both political parties in Congress. So I think my years of experience and my judgment and my independence and my record at the local, state, and federal level really give me the overview to represent the 4th District in Washington, D.C.
Linda Runbeck, what do you bring to the race that these other two candidates don't?
Well, I'm a former social worker turned small business owner turned legislator, and I think that that kind of experience background has stood me very well in terms of understanding the issues that are so important in the 4th District, and certainly that the government gets involved with. I think I've shown too that I can take leadership on big issues, form bipartisan solutions, and basically, I've been bold about saying what the proper role of government should be. I think that's a very important thing for an elected official to know. I mean, there are some places where government does have a role and some places where it does not.
One of the big complaints about Congress the last 15, 20 years has been the perception, anyway, that so much in Washington is done on the basis of, for lack of a better term, kind of partisan nastiness, a desire to score political points rather than actually get much done. What, if anything, would you do about that? Tom Foley?
Well, I think that's where I could really make a difference. As an independent elected congressman, I think I could try to bring both parties together. My two opponents here have already said who they would vote for Speaker of the House, and they've already taken their party line positions. And the parties tend to polarize people and pull them to the far right and the far left. And I think as an independent, and if the the House is going to be controlled by several votes, two, three, four votes, I think I have the independence to work with both parties and other independent candidates out there, should they be elected, to bring a consensus and really see, and do what's best for the 4th District of Minnesota, not to please a party boss of Dick Gebhardt or Dick Armey. So that's why I think I can be independent. My only interest are the people of the 4th District, not the political parties that have been mean and pulling people apart and have not really done this country a great service.
Linda Runback?
You know, I think a lot of the issues we get frustrated with, it's because we don't have information and we don't understand what the intricate debate differences are. And frankly, I think a legislator's key role is to educate and to help the constituents understand really what is at stake. And there are so many layers to many of these complicated issues. And I think they're real. I don't know that, I mean, in some cases, yes, there are, you know, ideological stances that should be broken down. But in other cases, they are very legitimate differences and they need understanding.
Mm-hmm. Betty McCollum?
Well, I will be caucusing with the Democrats, but I grew up in a family where I had a Republican mother and a Democratic father. And so I watched at an early age discussions take place, which were respectful, and listened to my parents come together with what they thought would probably be in the best interest of the country. And so I grew up with that philosophy. I think that people are frustrated by what they see as gridlock. And in my leadership role in the Minnesota House, I work to end gridlock quite often. We work to get the tax proposal passed out of the Minnesota House, the largest tax cut ever, working with Governor Ventura, working together with different groups. On the Health and Human Services Committee, I've worked with Republicans to move forward to make sure that healthcare workers received better pay. And I'll continue listening and working with people in order to get the work done.
One last question before we get to some listener calls here. Congress, again this year, and the White House have failed to reach an agreement on the kind of the basic bills that the government needs to operate. They're almost a month behind schedule this time around. Any thoughts on what might be done to try to get Congress and the White House back on the same path so they get their work done, at least on time? Linda Runback?
Well, I'll take a flyer. I think it's all because there's an election in the next week, and so much of the issue is are being politicized, and Clinton is threatening vetoes if the Republican House doesn't do what he wants them to do. So maybe we need to have the budget year be in off years, off election years, something like that. But it's all about politics.
Mm-hmm. Betty McCollum?
Well, I think there is the election factor in it, but from the reading that I've done and in the papers and watching a lot of the shows, I think that the president's working very hard to make sure that we have a fiscal policy that is sound has made it very, very clear what he would and would not veto when it came to a lot of the enormous projected tax cuts that, in his opinion, were out of line and only benefited very few people in this nation.
Mm-hmm. Tom Foley?
Well, I think the both political parties have intentionally failed to pass a number of bills because they're both posturing for the electorate for the election next week. And I think that just shows that the people want a new way of governing, one that's less partisan and not having the political bickering that is going on. And the speakers talked before, or my opponents talked before, about who they're going to vote for speaker. And I think that's part of the problem. They haven't looked at what's in the best interest of the 4th District. They've already decided to go with their political parties, whether the far right or the far left. You know, international trade has been one of the crowning achievements of the Clinton-Gore administration. And the Clinton-Gore administration had to break with the Democratic Party to pass the North American Free Trade Agreement to have trade with Canada and Mexico and to pass normalized trade relations with China. My Democratic opponent opposes the crowning achievements of the Clinton-Gore, disagrees with them because the party bosses and the union said, no, you have to be with us. So she doesn't want to have free trade. And I think that's one of the best thing that's ever happened to the 4th District, with expanding the jobs and the economy. And it's just a shame that partisan politics really prevents the type of policies that help people.
Betty McCollum, you're shaking your head.
Well, I'm not against free trade, Tom. And I don't know why you would assume that. Yes, I do not support the trade agreement, the permanent trade agreement with China, because it didn't have the environmental protections that I felt that it should have, and it didn't have the human rights protections in it that I thought it should have to make sure that our workers in our country are competing on a fair level. But I do support trade. I just didn't support the permanent trade that was moving forward. You know, we live in a global society. That's true. We need to have communication. We need to have trade. But we also have a responsibility in this country to make sure that we're setting high environmental standards for clean air, clean water for the next generations, and that we have worker standards that include safety, that include not being for child labor. And I think we need to look at those on a case-by-case basis.
Linda Runbeck, what's your position on these trade agreements?
Well, I'm for free trade. I think it's a matter of getting in agreement with all these third world countries, bringing them into the fold, so to speak. I think by that process, they are required to conform to a rule of law. They have to realize and respect courts. They have to respect intellectual property and play the game according to the rules. So, to me, it's the first step, and then we can work out some of the additional goals.
Gary, they say they're for free trade, but that's a lot of platitudes and political doublespeak. The two bills that were before Congress were the North American Free Trade Agreement and the Normalizing Trade Relations with China, which had a lot of impact on the 4th District, jobs of Medtronic, St. Jude, 3M, and other jobs in the 4th District. Governor Ventura just went to Mexico as a follow-up to the North American Free Trade Agreement. Our largest trading partners are Canada and Mexico, and jobs in the 4th District depend upon these trade agreements, yet Betty McCollum has not been for that. This is the crowning achievement of the Clinton-Gore Democratic administration. Al Gore has been known for setting standards for environmental issues, yet Betty McCollum doesn't support the Gore proposal. She's bending to Dick Gebhardt and the union bosses, and again being pulled to the far left and not doing what's good for the 4th District of Minnesota.
Our candidates in the 4th District have joined us today here in the studio, Republican Linda Runbeck, Independence Party candidate Tom Foley, and DFLer Betty McCollum. And Election Day, a week from tomorrow, they have come by today to talk about the issues and take your questions. Give us a call here, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Carla, you're up first. Go ahead, please.
Hi. The environment is very important to me, and whichever one of you is elected to serve the 4th District in Congress has really big shoes to fill left by Bruce Vento. And as an environmentalist, I guess I was really disappointed to read last week in the Star Tribune that Linda Runbeck said, and I'll quote it here, "I appreciated Bruce's hard work on the environment, but some of his devotees included the radical fringe element that wasn't interested in a balanced approach." And Linda, I guess I'd like to know who exactly is this radical fringe element you're referring to, and I'll take the answer off the air. Thanks.
Senator Runbeck.
I will stand by my position. One of the bigger debates in the last decade has been the issue of the dry cask storage of nuclear waste, the NSP issue. And what's at stake, of course, is the energy that fuels our homes and our industries. And I was in favor of dry cask storage for NSP. And I know that many people who are supporting Betty McCollum were not in favor of that. I mean, it's clearly a sign that common sense has broken down. I have a strong record in support of many of the landmark pieces of legislation to protecting the environment through the last decade. I mean, starting with Wetlands Heritage Protection Act and the Toxic Pollution Prevention Act, and I could continue to name them. But there is a balanced position, and then there is a radical position that basically doesn't allow for life to continue.
Representative McCollum, what position did you take on the issue of dry cask storage at Prairie Island?
Well, I didn't support the dry cask storage because it was the federal government, when they issued the license to that plant, said that they would have a place for us to store the nuclear waste, that it was a federal responsibility. And when we voted in the House, we were voting to take over that responsibility from the federal government. We were the first state in the nation to say that we would be responsible for the storage of nuclear waste. And with what we see going on with deregulation and other interests out there, I'm very concerned that the federal government is not living up to its responsibility. And I'll work hard to make sure that the federal government does live up to its responsibility for nuclear waste. But I think there's a clear difference, especially if people had an opportunity to look at the voter's guide in the St. Paul paper on environmental standards. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to fight hard to make sure that we improve our air quality, that we improve our water quality, and that we have standards. That is something that impacts us today, and it impacts the next generation. And so when it comes to pollution standards, I'm going to not leave it up to local municipalities. I'm not going to leave it up to businesses. I'm going to leave it up to the citizens in this state to work through their federal government to make sure that we protect our air and water.
Tom Foley, you weren't in the legislature, didn't have to vote on that dry cask storage issue, but if you had been, how would you have voted?
Well, I wasn't there to listen to the debate, but certainly the environmental issues, I consider myself a strong and environmentalists, not only clean air, clean water, but certainly we have to look at our whole quality of life in the metro area, certainly the quality of transportation and highways and bus systems and rail systems, whether it's light rail or commuter rail, all in affordable housing, all intertwined into making sure that we have the quality of life and an environment that we have lived in Minnesota and want to continue and live in Minnesota. The federal government does have a responsibility to solve the nuclear storage issue. We have been paying money for over 20 years, the consumers of electricity in Minnesota, and we have very cheap rates right now. But it is a federal government issue, and we have to find a final depository. But it was an issue that the state was that had to decide and should have decided on how they're going to keep energy cheap and in Minnesota, and those in the legislature had to decide that issue at that time, whether they kept that facility open and to keep us keep electricity relatively cheap here. But it is a federal problem, and I intend to solve that problem in finding a final depository for nuclear waste in the United States.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of issues to discuss here, but let me just follow up on that one. Isn't it our response, since it's our waste, isn't it our responsibility to take care of it? Why dump it on the people in Nevada? Betty McCollum?
Well, it's not a question of dumping it on everybody. It's a question of being responsible. When those licenses were granted, it was not granted with the idea that we would be permanently storing for generation upon generation upon generation nuclear waste on a floodplain in the Mississippi River. And on top of that, I have been out to the facility, and you can stand in the backyard of a home where a child plays, and you can see where that nuclear waste is being stored. And I don't think that we would tolerate here in the 4th District having nuclear waste stored next to somebody's backyard.
Tom Foley?
Well, it's become a partisan political football as well in Washington, D.C. We do have to find a final permanent storage for nuclear waste. My fear is that the federal government will pass a law saying, all right, we're going to federalize it, we'll take it, and we'll keep it right in the same place that it's always been, and it's not a state problem, it's now a federal problem, and the federal government will just leave the storage casks right in Red Wing, and that's not a good solution, but I know that's been discussed. So we have to find what's best for the entire United States, and we shouldn't be pitting state against state, but a lot of it has gone on partisan issues on the two U.S. senators that were Democrats, got a promise out of the White House that they would veto any legislation putting nuclear waste in Nevada. In fact, that's what turned out, and they couldn't overcome the veto. So, unfortunately, a lot of it got to be, again, partisan politics and not what's best for the people of the United States or the people of the 4th District of Minnesota.
Linda Runbeck?
Well, I do think that some of the concern is for the proper geological siting for that waste. And it does appear that Nevada is the place that has the safest for that situation. So I'm hopeful that we'll be able to move off the dime and make certain that that is a central site.
Gary, your question, please.
Oh, good morning. I have a question, a two-part question that I'd like to have all of the candidates answer. And first part is, what are each of your views on the growth in federal programs? Like, should there be more programs or should there be less? And part two, how do you think that the current House has done in stemming the growth or addition of federal programs? I'll hang up and take my answer off the air.
Okay, Tom Foley?
Well, I think we should reduce the number of federal programs that we have, and we should curtail as much as possible the federal government's role in just creating or solving every problem that that comes along. We have to have a partnership between the private sector and the public sector. But there are priorities and there are initiatives that the federal government has to take the lead on. And again, the House has to, and Congress has to take an overall approach to what are good policies, just not turn it down because it would increase the number of programs. I think we should reduce the wasteful programs. We had many wonderful ideas in the Great Society in the mid-1960s, educational policy being one, to provide good education for citizens in the United States, particularly those states that weren't giving a good education. However, since that time, we've never really restructured it, and we keep adding layer upon layer upon layer of program when the federal government should reduce their role, set some overall guidelines, and delegate a lot of that back to the states and the local government where education is mostly funded. But they should set the guidelines. They should have competition, innovation, flexibility, but most of all accountability for the money that's going there. So I think it's a priority question. The current House, I think the House has probably passed too many laws and too many programs. And I think the Gore administration or Gore's program in trying to have innovation in government has done a good job in trying to reduce the overall level of governmental employees, but we should work towards that goal and reduce it even further.
Linda Runbeck?
Well, I think I've expressed my concern fairly frequently about federalizing programs. I think the elections are typically about how much government you want, and so we're having a very vigorous debate about that, certainly from the presidential race on down. My concern is particular to Minnesota because we are a high-tax state, and new programs that look to the federal government for solutions and for our taxes end up not serving us very well. They're not a good deal for Minnesota. We have, in most cases, done many of the programs ourselves, so our tax dollars end up going to other states than Minnesota. And we also know that it's just too hard to control and contain programs once they've gotten a foothold at the federal level. So I will be one who will definitely draw a hard line in the sand as to what programs become federalized.
Do you think the Republican-controlled Congress has been tough enough in that area?
Well, I understand that they've actually eliminated some 300 small programs. Now, I haven't seen the list, but that's what I'm hearing. Now, I think that's moving in the right direction, and certainly their ability to stay within budget levels, within revenue levels, has given us the surplus that we now enjoy. So for the first time, we're actually seeing some, maybe not enough, but some fiscal prudence.
Betty McCollum, growth in government programs, government spending, what's your...
Well, we need to put in place sunsets, so that we examine programs to find out whether or not they're working. And if they're not working, then you go back to the communities and you talk to the local units of government and find out why it's not working, if we need to improve something to make sure that it works. I think we're seeing that going on with housing right now, with the housing shortage. I mean, there's a lot of dialogue between the city of St. Paul, Ramsey, and Dakota County with the federal government about what should be going on about the housing crisis. You just don't throw another program on. You go to the communities, you listen to the needs of the citizens there, and then you develop something that's in the best interest of the 4th District and the nation. And when it comes to the caller asked about cutting programs, I'll tell you, I find it rather alarming the discussion that's been taking place about increasing and building this huge missile defense program, which is just astronomical for the dollars that it would take. I don't see where it has any accountability or has any direct benefits for citizens in the 4th District.
We are talking today with the candidates for Congress from Minnesota's 4th District, St. Paul, really all of Ramsey County and parts of Dakota County as well. Republican Linda Runback is here, Independence Party candidate Tom Foley, Democrat Betty McCollum. And if you have a question for the candidates, give us a call, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. One of the most closely watched congressional races in the country. And given how close the partisan breakdown is in Washington, this could be one of those seats that determines just which party actually controls the U.S. House for the next 2 years. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. We'll get to more of your calls here in just a couple of minutes.
Programming on NPR is supported by the University of Minnesota Morris, ranked by the Carnegie Foundation as one of 7 leading national public liberal arts colleges.
I'm Juan Williams. Talk of the Nation is not your typical talk radio show. We take up issues you don't often hear on other programs. And as part of NPR News, we draw on some of the most talented reporters, editors, and producers in the country. But our most important producer is you, the listener. Your questions and comments are the engine of our program. Be sure to join me weekdays here on NPR's Talk of the Nation.
Talk of the Nation begins at 1 o'clock this afternoon here on Minnesota Public Radio. Today's programming is made possible by the annual support of listeners like you. You can join online at minnesotapublicradio.org. News headlines, here's Stephen John. Stephen?
Thank you, Gary. Personal income and consumer spending both posted big advances last month. The Commerce Department says incomes rose by 1.1% in September, the fastest pace in more than a year, and spending shot up by 0.8%, the biggest advance since February. The spending increase was propelled by heavy demand for durable goods, such as automobiles. The Supreme Court today refused to hear a California case involving a juror who used a flip of a coin to decide to convict a man on cocaine charges. Appeals judges let the verdict stand, saying it's not as if the whole jury decided the case that way. The High Court has turned aside a challenge to the National Tobacco Settlement. The court refused to consider whether smokers wound up paying illegally higher prices for cigarettes as a result of the landmark $246 billion deal. Vice presidential candidate Dick Cheney has ended his speech in Rochester. The number two man on the Republican ticket spoke for about 35 minutes this morning, offering specifics on the Bush-Cheney plan for education to about 800 people at Rochester Lord's High School. Cheney will continue his day stumping in Iowa and Michigan. George W. Bush will visit the Twin Cities and Duluth on Wednesday. The Democratic nominee Al Gore attended a campaign rally in Minneapolis over the weekend. Green Party vice presidential nominee Winona LaDuke spoke to a gathering of several hundred at the University of Minnesota Duluth last night. LaDuke is a resident of the White Earth Reservation near Bemidji and is running on the Green Party ticket headed by Ralph Nader. Closing arguments are expected today in St. Paul in the trial of the man accused of shooting Tony Basta last April. Dale Stewart testified that he had planned only to scare Basta, not kill him, when he fired the fatal shot. Scattered showers statewide today. Thunderstorms possible this morning in some places. Highs from the upper 40s in extreme northeastern Minnesota to near 60 in the south. For the Twin Cities, a 50-50 chance of showers today. International Falls, 47 degrees. It's 53 in Rochester, 51 in the Twin Cities. And Gary, that's the latest from the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.
Thank you, Stephen. It's about 25 minutes before noon. This is midday on Minnesota Public Radio. And our guests this hour, the candidates for Congress from Minnesota's 4th District. Democrat Betty McCollum is here, Republican Linda Runback, and Independence Party candidate Tom Foley. Election day just a week from tomorrow, just about time to vote. And a lot of people all around the country are going to be paying close attention to just how Minnesota 4th District voters vote, because this could be one of those elections that decides which party will control the U.S. House for the next 2 years. Again, if you have a question for the candidates, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. And before we get back to our callers, let me ask another one, if I can, please. Lots of concern, apparently, among people about violence and sex in the media, the entertainment media. Is there anything, any role for the U.S. House to play in trying to deal with that issue? Linda Runback?
You know, I do like government to take the role of bully pulpit. I do think that legislators, congresspeople, can be effective in terms of drawing attention to issues such as that, and begin to get some change happening. I'm not sure how much can actually be legislated. I do believe that there are going to be some devices people can you know, attach to their televisions and so on. I think that there's a market for that, and people do want to be able to control the violence. But I think at the moment it's got to have to be a private sector decision.
Betty McCollum?
Well, as a parent of children that are now 19 and 22, I was watching very, very carefully the discussions that were led by Tipper Gore about putting the warning labels. And I have to say the solution that came forward from that discussion federally was a good one. And I was at the University of Minnesota last night out at one of the dorms, and we were talking to the students there, and this issue came up. And I told them, you know, I like the fact that there's warning labels out there for parents, because it gives parents an opportunity to have a dialogue about what their children are listening and watching. Not necessarily to censor it, but to know what's going on. And I remember my son coming home with something, and I saw the warning label, and I asked to see the lyrics, and we sat at the kitchen table, and I told him how I felt about some of them. And a couple of years later, he said, you know, that was a really valuable discussion that we had. It made him look at things differently. So I like the fact that our government did step in and did work with the entertainment industry to put warning labels on, and I'm very supportive of that.
Tom Foley?
Well, I think there is too much violence and sex in the media. Certainly, we have to make sure it's not in the prime time. I think parents have to take a very active role. I know I did, raising two children, but we can't censor either. So I think we have to vocalize our displeasure as congressional people and congressional leaders, and try to work with the whole entertainment industry to try to change the way. I know there's some wonderful products out there. I don't think they have to go violent and negative and still make a good product, but there are some innovative ways with new technologies. I know the V-chip was put in some of the televisions where parents could control some of the cable access, and maybe some other things will come up in the near future. But with high technology and in the power of persuasion, particularly from the White House and Congress, I think goes a long way, and give some incentives not to get into that area.
Steve, your question, please.
Yes, I have a comment and a question. And my comment, first of all, is to thank NPR for providing this forum so that everyone could listen to these candidates. And I want to say that I'm very sorry, Ms. McCollum, that you refused the public television debate, because they've just canceled it now, because only Linda Runbeck and Tom Foley would agree to come there. But that being said, my question is that the federal government is going to spend a lot of money on the war on drugs in Colombia. And you're all children of the 60s, and I want to know if any of you have ever used cocaine, and I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Any coke heads here? Betty McCollum?
No, and I've never even smoked a cigarette, so I'm pretty boring.
All right. Tom Foley?
No, I never used drugs, and I guess that came after I was out of school, but sorry to disappoint the caller.
Linda Runbeck?
Categorically, no. Never have.
Should we have provided as much aid as we're going to be, as we have, to Colombia to fight, nominally to fight the drug war? Of course, critics suggest that what we're really doing is getting caught right in the middle of a civil war in Colombia and propping up a dictatorial, militaristic government. Tom Foley.
I don't think so. I was against it. I think Jim Ramstad, who was one of the few House members to vote against it, articulated a very good rationale in terms of keep throwing money down at Colombia when that money could be better spent in treatment and deterring people from using drugs in this country. I think we have to probably put a certain amount in there, but I think we overreached with it was something over $300 billion that we put into Colombia, and I think that was very excessive. And a lot of it probably had more to do with not the drug war itself, but maintaining some kind of a relationship with the government of Colombia. So I think the House overreached on that one.
Linda Runbeck?
I think we need to continue to work on the foreign relations with the government of Colombia, so that at that level they understand that we're expecting agreements and compliance and so on. But I don't know specifically how we could, you know, in a direct way, do much to change the culture there, or to change the incentives, I guess, that are built into to their economy that are from the drug culture. But I think we have to continue to press on in terms of making sure that we are cutting off the channels into our country.
Betty McCollum?
Well, you know, the whole issue about what's going on down in Colombia is very alarming to a lot of people. And I think whenever we have dollars going in and it's going towards a military force, we have to be very careful. We have to be very responsible to make sure that they're meeting the goal that we wanted that to meet, and that is to reduce the amount of drugs flowing into this country and not funding one side of a civil war against another. Having said that, though, I really believe the war on drugs is best fought here at home. And right now we have people who don't have access to chemical dependency, mental health coverage on their insurance policies when they want to get off a path of destruction in their lives. So we need to work on increasing opportunities for that. And people who do not have private insurance have shared in committee hearings in the Minnesota House and that on and off, that sometimes when they want to go in for treatment, they're told to wait for 6 months. So we need to turn that around. We need to fight the war on drugs here at home with having good intervention policies for people when they're ready to get off drugs.
Energy policy. Most of the debate this year, to the extent there's been a debate about energy, has focused on how to increase supplies, especially at the presidential level. I'm curious, do you think there's anything that the government should do to try to reduce the demand on energy supplies? Linda Runbeck.
We're going to have, a long debate on energy and our future relating to that. You know, one thing we haven't decided on in this country is what we think is the preferable source of energy. If it's hydroelectricity, then we're going to need to build some dams. If it's coal, and coal now has developed into an energy source that is much, much cleaner than it ever was, and that might be a choice for the future. And so we have some big decisions to make. We do have issues about refinery capacity and some of that. But I think, as you know, if the price on the gas tank continues to be above $1.50, that you will find people changing their driving habits and changing their consuming habits rather rapidly. So I believe that is part of the answer as well, and certainly to find incentives for producing more fuel-efficient vehicles is certainly got to be underway.
Do you think perhaps the government, federal government, should jack up the gas tax substantially more to further reduce demand?
I think that would probably catch a lot of people in positions where they would be hurt. I think over time we're going to see behavior change. I think the gas prices are going to stay at a you know, $1.50 or more. That's probably the real price, and we should certainly be paying that. So it's been perhaps artificially low for too long a time.
Betty McCollum, any role for the government in trying to reduce the demand for the amount of energy that we consume?
Well, yes, there is, and we can provide incentives for businesses for cogeneration. We can provide incentives here nationally, working with state and local governments for off-peak use. And then our whole issue of alternative energy, we have really not put the resource dollars that we could into our higher education systems. The University of Minnesota would be a wonderful example. We've been looking at doing more biomass here in Minnesota, and we should certainly be working with our higher ed institutions for biomass, for wind, for solar. We need to have a mix of alternative energy out there, and I would be very, very supportive of that.
And increased federal requirements for gas mileage on the vehicles, would you support that?
Absolutely.
Tom Foley, any role for the government in trying to reduce the demand that we
Well, absolutely. We haven't had a comprehensive energy policy in this country since the mid-1970s when President Carter was there, when we had the increase in fuel prices. But you have to look at energy, whether you're talking about gas consumption and our reliance on foreign oil or domestic oil. The foreign oil, we're pretty much captive of the OPEC countries. We have to find other sources of oils from non-OPEC countries, more from Mexico, more from Venezuela. We have to be involved in the discussion of funding a pipeline through Baku and through the country of Georgia and down to the Mediterranean so that we're not held captive in the energy, in the electricity area. Minnesota pays 6.3 cents per kilowatt hour versus San Francisco to pay something like 24 cents. So it's like triple, and we're going to have problems in Minnesota attracting businesses unless we can keep our energy prices relatively low and stable. So we have to have alternative sources such as wind and solar and hydro to be competitive here. So I think we have to have a comprehensive energy policy, and that's the role of the United States, and we haven't had one.
But what about demand?
Well, I think, sure. I think we give incentives to have more fuel-efficient cars. I think, again, one of the candidates talked about more coal. Coal brings some environmental problems. If you have more sulfates, you have more acid rain. If you have less sulfates, you have more mercury in the water. So I think we have to do a balancing act with the environment being the one issue that we, the one constant that we don't want to ruin our environment. But certainly we want to give efficiencies and alternative sources of fuel, both oil and electricity.
Michael, your question, please.
Yes, thank you for taking my calls. A recent study by the National Academy of Science found that immigrants annually contribute $10 billion to the nation's economy, and that immigration benefits the U.S. economy overall and has little negative effects on the income and job opportunities of most native-born Americans. Furthermore, a declaration by the new Emerging Market Alliance in Minnesota, which Governor Ventura supported, indicated that new immigrants, ethnic minorities, and Native Americans make up a consumer base of close to $6 billion in Minnesota.
Okay, that your question then?
And the other point I want to point out is that new immigrants pays an estimate of $500 billion in state and local taxes. And my question is, how important are refugees and immigrants to the candidates, and why should we support them in their bids for Congress, since we haven't heard that much emphasis on refugees and immigrants at all in the past several weeks? And I'll hang up and take your response on the air.
Okay. Let's just comment on that. But if you would include, that's one of the hang-ups now in Washington at this point as to whether one of the bills, there's a dispute over amnesty for people who are here illegally. And if you were in Congress right now, how would you vote on that? And then, you know, something broader on immigration. Linda Runbeck?
I think demonstrated a real support for the immigrant populations, and I think our nation, as you point out, has provided the jobs, and the incomes are going up. I think most new immigrants have been very wonderful citizens of our country. I would support raising the cap on the number of visas that we have available so that we can bring more technology workers here to our country. I was a supporter of expediting the the visa process here in Minnesota, so that these visas would happen more quickly. And I do believe that periodic amnesties are a good thing to look at, and I believe I would be supportive.
Betty McCollum?
Well, the issue that the caller is talking about amnesties and family reunification, I was at Lady Guadalupe Church yesterday, and families were coming out talking to me about all the problems that they're having and dealing with the INS. These are people who pay taxes, who have children who are American-born citizens, and we just need to really make sure that if Minnesota is going to stay competitive, we know we're going to have a worker shortage. We need to embrace all hardworking families in Minnesota, and I would work very hard to do that.
On the amnesty question, if you were out in Washington right now, how would you vote on that?
I haven't seen that particular bill, but we do need to we do need to do something, and I think amnesty is an issue that we need to look at very carefully because the INS has failed miserably in providing good service to the immigrants that are here, and that's not their fault. Quite often what happens with some of their legal quagmires they find themselves in.
Tom Foley?
Well, I think the 4th District has been blessed with the immigration community in our area, whether it's Hispanic or Hmong or Native American Indians, Ethiopians, Eritreans. I think they've been productive citizens, good taxpayers. So I have a number of co-chairs of my campaign that are Hmong or Indian, American Indian, and a lot of Hispanics working on my campaign. So I'm very supportive of the immigration community and their issues. I think we have to look at the amnesty question very closely. I'm not for a blanket amnesty, although I haven't read the specific legislation that's pending right now. But I think the Immigration Natural Resource Naturalization Service really has to work better with the communities that do have needs and not break up families that are located here, and they've been too rigid. The INS has just been too rigid in our enforcement of our immigration issues. So we have to reach out and work with those communities because they're very productive citizens and doing a lot of jobs that we can't find other people to do. So,
okay. Unfortunately, we're just about out of time here, but I wanted to just run through for people who haven't been following the race very closely, at least kind of a yes and no on a few big issues. Always unfair. I understand that. So, but what the heck? Let's see. Social Security, should at least part of the system be privatized? Betty McCollum?
No.
Tom Foley?
Not until we've shored it up.
Linda Runbeck?
Yes.
The estate tax, should it be repealed entirely? Tom Foley?
No, raise the limits.
Linda Runbeck?
No, raise the limits.
Betty McCollum?
No, raise the limits.
All right. Marriage penalty. Should that provision in the tax law, which penalizes some married couples, be repealed? Should there be a broader approach to this problem so that, in effect, all married couples would get a tax cut? Let's see. Who's first? Linda Runbeck.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
We would eliminate the marriage penalty.
Okay.
Yes.
Betty McCollum?
We need to have a broad base. Look at that. The marriage penalty was set up to protect widows, and so I won't take a vote that puts one against the other. We need all our families to be secure.
Tom Foley?
It should be repealed as a broader tax policies, but only at certain levels, and we have to make sure that our tax policy doesn't break the new economy and the budget that we have going right now.
And a real yes and no. Campaign finance, total public funding of campaigns. Would you support such a thing, Betty McCollum?
I'm ready for it.
Tom Foley?
Yes.
Linda Runbeck?
No, that's too extreme.
Okay, let me give you 30 seconds each to make a last pitch here for votes before we have to wrap up. And let's see, who was Tom Foley? You want to go first? 30 seconds?
Well, I think the crowning achievement of the Clinton-Gore administration has been our international trade agreements, NAFTA, a North American Free Trade Agreement, Free Trade with China, Fast Track Authority. I disagree with my Democratic opponent, who seems to embrace the policies of Pat Buchanan, the reactionary trade policies of Pat Buchanan, rather than the Gore-Clinton administration. So I think the 4th District has been blessed with the international trade agreements.
That was Tom Foley. Linda Runbeck, 30 seconds, please.
Well, I do believe this election is about our future and how we're going to use the resources, the surplus that's available. And I'm a big believer that in most cases, families, local communities, local decision makers, and free markets are the ones who can do it best and have most options. I believe I'm the best candidate in the 4th. I have been out doing much outreach. I do have General Vang Pao's endorsement in the Hmong community. And have done my homework.
Thank you. Linda Runbeck and Betty McCollum.
Well, I've been listening to the families in the 4th District, and I'm going to be out advocating for them for quality education, affordable health care, and a cleaner environment. And if elected to Congress, those are my priorities.
Thanks to all three of you for coming in today, and good luck to you. 1 week to go.
Thank you.
Our guests today, candidates for Congress in Minnesota's 4th Congressional District, Independence candidate Tom Foley, Republican Linda Runbeck, and DFLer Betty McCollum. Lots more information about the candidates and the issues on our website, minnesotapublicradio.org. Check it out. Make sure you check out the Select a Candidate feature. kind of computer dating service where you punch in your position on the issues and the computer twirls around and tells you which candidate is closest to you on those issues. Sixth district debate Wednesday night here at 6 o'clock on Minnesota Public Radio.
Hello, Tom Keith here, reminding you that Minnesota Public Radio members get first crack at tickets for the next run of A Prairie Home Companion. Member ticket sales begin soon for our spring season of shows in St. Paul, so join us right now at 1-800-227-2811 or click and join at minnesotapublicradio.org. And thanks. I gotta go.
As part of our election coverage, Minnesota Public Radio has invited all seven candidates for U.S. Senate to present a four-minute statement about their candidacy. Over the next week, all seven candidates will present their views on each of Minnesota Public Radio's news programs. These candidates' statements are unfiltered and unedited by Minnesota Public Radio. Here's David Daniels, the Grassroots Party candidate for the U.S. Senate.
Every man, every woman, every creature on this earth has dreams. I have dreams, you have dreams. Have good dreams, bad dreams, sweet dreams, and evil ones. You might be living in a dream, our American dream. Hi, folks, this is David Daniels. I'm a candidate for the United States Senate on the Grassroots Party ticket. I'm also a playwright and performance artist, and what you just heard was a little piece of mine, which in some ways sums up why I am running this year as a candidate for the United States Senate. 30 years ago, Minnesota had a senator, Eugene J. McCarthy, who was a poet, writer, and also took an issue, the unjust war in Vietnam, and with a group of folks who in many ways were turned off to the system previously, helped to topple an incumbent president. Well, 30 years later, we are facing our own internal and domestic wars, and these are some of the focuses as to why I am a candidate for the United States Senate. I am talking about in this race, number one, the issue of corporate welfare reform. I have said as United States Senate that in order for these corporations to continue to receive tax breaks and subsidies. After all, we're looking at a day and age where many of these CEOs are making 400 times as much as that person on the bottom. So I am talking in terms of corporate welfare reform, tying in tax breaks and subsidies that many of these corporations get to such items as paying a livable wage, practicing sound environmental practices, and stronger protections for workers to organize in unions. I have also talked about reduction of the national debt and tying that in with an end to militarism. David Daniels, as United States Senator, would propose legislation that would withdraw American troops and close bases worldwide, would withdraw from NATO, and would also call for American withdrawal from the World Trade Organization, keeping us from starting wars for oil and corporate interest. I have also called for, of course, the Grassroots Party is the party that stands for the legalization of marijuana. And as United States Senator, I would introduce legislation based on the Alaska Initiative, which is on the ballot in November, which calls for the legalization of marijuana for the personal, industrial, and medical use, would also give amnesty and restitution to past offenders, and would also call for tax-free and regulation-free use of marijuana. These are the focus issues that I am talking about in this campaign. And if you believe in these issues, I would encourage you on November 7th to cast your vote for David Daniels, Grassroots Party candidate for U.S. Senate. Thank you.
Minnesota Public Radio has invited all the Senate candidates to present their views. So you can hear DFL candidate Mark Dayton tonight on All Things Considered. And all of the statements are available on our website at minnesotapublicradio.org. It's 12 noon, and this is Midday coming to you on Minnesota Public Radio. We're going to break.